Ruth, the one who was loyal. Hi, and welcome back to Who Are You? Season 2. Can you believe it's season 2? Yeah, I know. We nearly finished season 2 now.
Oh, no.
I know. I think we've got about 3 or 4 left.
Yeah.
But this is our weekly study looking at the life and significance of characters from the Bible. And we were talking about this in the week, weren't we, last week, that we've really enjoyed this whole journey. It never ceases to amaze me as we get really into the nitty-gritty of people and characters from the Bible. Number one, how much we get wrong.
Yeah.
I can't believe how much we get wrong. Well, we just make assumptions, don't we, that we think we know the story, or we think we know, you know, the gist. And then once you get back into the Word of God and really start to look at it, then you realise that maybe there are bits that we've got wrong.
Yeah.
But also, we've really enjoyed sort of looking also, obviously, biblically, but looking at a wider context, looking into historical sort of aspects of the times, looking at the dispensation of God, looking at what church tradition says about certain people. So we really have drawn in all different types of sources, but obviously... our main source is the Word of God, because that's our truth.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, and I really feel like I know them so much more now.
Yeah, definitely.
They feel like family.
Yeah, they do.
They do, yeah. Well, shall we get going?
Yes.
Let's look at Ruth. We were quite excited about this one, weren't we?
Yeah, definitely.
So basically, Ruth is, I think, a real epic tale. But it's condensed, actually, only into 85 verses in the Bible.
Wow.
Obviously in the book of Ruth.
Yeah.
And I found that quite shocking, because I really, in my mind, it's such a big story.
Yeah.
It seems to have lots of different parts. But actually, it only covers 4 very short chapters in the book of Ruth. We don't know fully who the author of the book of Ruth is, but it's believed to have been Samuel. It's also believed to have been possibly originally part of the book of Judges that was written shortly after the time of King David. But because it's so significant, the story of Ruth, it was separated throughout time under Jewish scholars right back at the beginning of time. And it was then put together as a separate book.
Yeah.
We'll get more into the reasons why later on in the study. But that's what it was believed to originally been attached to the book of Judges. Obviously, only 2 women have their own books in the Bible, which are Naomi,
Ruth and Esther.
Well done, Ruth and Esther. And so, you know, that's quite significant just in its own right, that this story is an important story, that she gets her own book.
Yeah.
she gets her own T-shirt.
Yeah.
Well, what do we know about Ruth? Well, Ruth was a Moabite and she was from the land of Moab. And Moab was a mountainous district that lies along the eastern shore of the Dead Sea. And that's in modern day Jordan.
Oh.
Okay. And it literally means, the Moab literally means the land just short of the promised land.
Oh, wow.
And this really is so true geographically, but also spiritually. I mean, that's kind of a name, isn't it?
Yeah.
The place just short of a good place. but we'll see as we get into this study how really true that is and significant that is. The Moabites were from the lineage of Moab and who was the son of Lot. And the Old Testament is absolutely full of continual battles between Israel and Moab. And they were collectively known as the enemies of the Israelites, God's chosen people. And they were the most prolific enemies. I mean, the Old Testament is absolutely chock-a-block, isn't it, of the ites? you know, all the tribes that would come and fight, or they would dwell together, or they would fight for land. You know, the Old Testament is full of ites. But what we find as we start to look into the Old Testament history is that the Moabites actually became a collective name for any enemy of Israel. They were that bad. They were literally seen as the enemies of God. We get an indication of that in Isaiah 25, verse 10. So they're that bad, this tribe, that they really take on a collective name. So it doesn't matter what tribe you came from, you could have been referred to as a Moabite simply because it was a collective name that was put on any enemy, not only of the Israelites, but of God himself.
Wow.
So they really were trouble,
this
tribe. Yeah. They were really had a reputation of being the worst of the worst. Mm. And I find that just took me a moment, to be honest with you, that this is where she came from.
Yeah.
Because we don't associate Ruth with that sort of behaviour or label at all, do we?
No.
We don't know a lot biblically about the Moabites. We can find out lineage and placement and all that sort of thing. But historically, the Moabites were conquered by the Babylonians in 582 BC. And so, again, there's no honour amongst thieves, is there? The Babylonians, which I would have said actually were the worst tribe of the tribes, but they actually conquered the Moabites.
Wow.
And what happened then was that after this conquest was that they disappeared from history completely.
Wow.
The Moabites were completely wiped out. What we know is historically is that the Moabite stone is the only written historical document that's left.
Yeah.
And it's not very big, and it doesn't have huge amounts of inscriptions upon it. But it was discovered in Dibon in Jordan in 1868, and it's housed today in the Louvre in Paris. So you can see it.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen it, and it doesn't, you can't believe it. It holds so much detail.
Yeah.
But it gives really very good descriptions of Moabite life and their conquests and really how awful they were.
Wow.
So I find that really interesting that there is still some artifacts left that we can read about what type of people the Moabites were. And that wasn't a fable.
Yeah.
They really were terrible.
Yeah.
And I think that number one, I find that fascinating because Ruth seems so far away from that, doesn't she?
She does.
But I think if we're going to understand Ruth, then we need to understand Naomi.
Mm.
Because the two are really pivotal in this story.
Yeah.
You can't really separate them.
Yeah.
So let's do a little bit of a background story here. So Naomi lived in Moab with her husband, and they had two sons.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband's name was Elimelech, and her two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. Gosh, that's a hard name to say. Okay. But they weren't Moabites.
Yeah.
They had actually escaped from Bethlehem in Judea because there had been a massive famine in Judea and they had settled in Moab.
Mm.
And we're told that in Ruth 1 verse 1 to 2. If you remember from previous studies, one of the things that, especially as we're looking at the Old Testament characters, is that we're finding that how God is feeling about Israel becomes very significant in the story and the life of these characters, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We know that Israel had reigns of good kings and bad kings, and that then was the consequence of what God did in that nation.
Yeah.
So one of the times that Israel was going through was that there was great famine in Judea. And we've talked about that in the past in other stories, certainly when we looked at Ahab, was that, you know, God would send famine to show his displeasure of the king and how he was ruling.
Yeah.
So number one, it gives us an indication of the wider times. But also, isn't it odd that you would escape into the enemy territory and settle there?
Yeah.
But that's exactly what Elimelech and Naomi and their kids did.
Mm.
They just went and they escaped the famine and they settled in Moab. So they got to Moab, and sometime after they settled, Elimelech dies.
Oh, wow.
And he left Naomi a widow with two sons. And the two sons took Moabite wives.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the wife's names were Opar and Ruth.
Mm.
And we're told that in 1 Ruth 1 verse 3 to 5. So here they are living in a foreign land. Mm. They've married foreign women.
Yeah.
And they live as a family unit for about 10 years after Elimelech's death. And then suddenly the two sons die. And there what you're left with is Naomi and the two young wives widowed.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's really difficult for me, it's on my list of questions,
yeah.
But one of the things that's difficult for me, excuse me, is that there's no explanation given biblically at all for any reasons why these three men died.
Yeah.
Okay. But according to the Jewish Targumims, which were spoken sort of translations of the Hebrew Bible that came in over time, it was suggested that Elimelech died because he left the promised land. And that the sons died because they took foreign wives, which was forbidden.
Wow.
We're told that in Deuteronomy 23, verse 3. So even though no explanation is given to us biblically, sort of in ancient Jewish writings, it is suggested that that is the reason why these men died. The Targum of Ruth is part of the Targumims. And what that is, it's an ancient Jewish commentary that dates from about 1189. And the Targumims were originally spoken translations of the Hebrew scripts that were spoken for non-Hebrews, so that they could hear the original scriptures. Yeah. But over time, as with humanness, they got added to. So people would interpret them and read the scriptures in foreign languages. But then they added their own commentaries to that, and it became a sermon rather than a direct sacred text. So we can't take that as absolute, but it is suggested, and it goes along too with the laws of God at the time. So it's just something to consider. But it is, you know, this awful situation where they've escaped a famine and now they've lost all the men in the company and the family. So after the sons died, Naomi, Orpah and Ruth leave Moab and they return to Bethlehem. That's the plan.
Yeah.
Because what they've actually heard is that the famine is over and they're setting off on this journey together back to Bethlehem. And we're told that in Ruth 1, verse 6 to 7.
Yeah.
So on the journey, Naomi tells them, look, girls, it's time for you to go home. I want you to go home to your own mothers and I want you to be blessed with new husbands and have wonderful new lives. And so all of a sudden, the two girls, Orpah and Ruth, they start crying and they start wailing and they're very, very unhappy about what Naomi has just said to them. And they just tell her, we don't want to do that. That's not what we want to do. We want to go with Naomi to be with her people.
Yeah.
And so we're told that in Ruth 1, verse 8 to 10. So it doesn't quite go to plan. So they carry on the journey, but Naomi is insisting. She's insisting that the two women return to their own families. And so after a while, Orpah kissed Naomi and she turned around and left and returned to her own family.
Yeah.
And she did what Naomi asked. But Ruth absolutely refused to go. And they carried on together to Bethlehem. But Naomi was not particularly happy about this. Okay. Now, in Jewish custom and law, this was actually against the law. Because women couldn't be left alone without the covering of a man. They either had to be their father, they had to be a husband, or they had to be a chaperone. So the fact that Naomi was walking quite a long distance from enemy territory back into Israel and then down to Bethlehem was quite a distance, and she was doing it without a covering of a man, which was not allowed. We're told that in Ruth 1 verse 11 to 19. So they carry on the journey. And then Ruth and Naomi finally arrive back in Bethlehem. And everybody, the word tells us that everybody was excited to see Naomi. And they were like, Naomi, it's you. I can't believe you're back. You know, people were really happy to see her. But the word tells us that Naomi was not happy. Yes. And she actually rebuked the people, the community. And she said, don't call me Naomi, but call me Mara. And Mara means bitterness. And she said, call me Mara because God has dealt me a bitter blow and God has ruined me.
Wow.
And we're told that in Ruth 1, verse 19 to 21. So quite a sort of almost simple backstory, but we can see that, you know, these men have died. The whole sort of lineage of the men have been wiped out. There are no children yet.
Yeah.
There are no male lines in this family. It is just the mother-in-law and the two daughters-in-law.
Yeah.
And they lose one along the way. And it ends up just being Ruth and Naomi entering back into the city. And she's not happy. She's bitter. She's broken.
Mm.
And that's really where our story begins.
Yeah.
So, interesting, huh?
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah. Wow.
So what speaks to you in that?
Oh, I think just kind of that, I mean, that must be so painful to lose your husband and then both your sons as well.
Yes.
And I can totally understand kind of feeling like God has kind of left you in that.
Yeah.
When you're not even in your hometown, you're somewhere that you don't really
You're
belong.
In enemy territory.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then to lose your family and, you know, to feel like you've lost absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And then to go home with a daughter who's not really your daughter.
Yeah.
And she isn't from the same place as you.
Right.
And you're walking back, I mean, in some ways, with an enemy.
Yeah.
You know, that must be, I mean, that's a lot of emotions just there to go through all that.
Isn't it interesting, though, that what we read in the Word was that everybody was happy to see Naomi.
Yeah.
They weren't happy to see Ruth because she was unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was an enemy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. You know, we just read sometimes in the Word, don't we, that they went from A to B.
Yeah.
But we don't realise A to B could have cost you your life. It could have taken you a week to get there. You know, it was you had to go through enemy territory. Yeah. It wasn't an easy thing to do. And I think that's definitely the truth in this little journey that they went on.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's carry on the story and let's look at some things that we can learn. I think it's safe to say that for us to really understand this story and to learn some things here, we're going to have to really get into some of the laws, which we're going to do now.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting that once you understand the laws and the significance of some of the things that we read in the Word of God, it makes us understand the fullness of God as we read them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they arrive back in Bethlehem, and Ruth 1:22 tells us that they arrive back in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Mm.
Okay, so Bethlehem was an arable land.
Yeah.
It's a farming land, and it was big business. It was their main industry. Okay. And Ruth 2 verse 1 to 4 tells us that Elimelech had a relative in Bethlehem called Boaz.
Oh.
And he was really rich. He was very prominent.
Mm.
And he was a relative of Elimelech's. So one day, Ruth tells Naomi that she's going to go to the fields to glean some sheaves.
Mm.
And it was here that she found Boaz, who owned some of the fields.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a minute here and explain and look at the gleaning process and the farming process, because this is hugely significant to the story.
Yeah.
So basically, gleaning is the act of picking up leftover crops that the workers had left in their ploughing. It was actually a legal requirement to provide food for the poor in Israel at that time. And if you like, it was an ancient type of food recovery.
Yeah.
Similar, I suppose, to modern day dumpster diving.
Yeah.
Where you just would allow and not sort of make difficult people being able to go and pick up what you no longer need.
Yeah.
And this is what gleaning was. Mm. So gleaning wasn't actually part of the sort of arable, you know, sort of harvest system. It was simply the picking up of the leftovers on the fields for the poor.
Yeah.
And that's what Ruth would have joined many different people to do, to go and pick up that stuff every day. And farmers had to allow the poor to come and glean as a social enterprise to help the poor. And it was fineable if you didn't do it.
Oh, wow.
So the fact that she went and did it was completely acceptable.
Yeah.
And she would have been one of many. So here she comes to pick up the stuff, just to pick up the leftover bits.
Yeah.
And Boaz notices Ruth and he asks his foreman, "Who's that girl? Who's that woman?" And the foreman told him, "Well, he's a relative of yours. She's a relative of yours. She's a relative of your kin, Elimelech. And she actually, Boaz, she's been gleaning all day without a break." And Boaz becomes concerned about her welfare.
Yeah.
And we're told this in Ruth 2 verse 5 to 13. Now, it's significant that she'd been doing this all day without a break.
Yeah.
Because gleaning was mainly done in the evening.
Oh, okay.
They would come in at the end of the evening and pick up what was left.
Yeah.
But Ruth had been there since sunrise and been doing it all day. So she was different in that sense. Maybe she didn't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. But that was what kind of made her stick out. Mm. One of the things that made her stick out. So Boaz goes to Ruth and he starts talking to her.
Mm.
And he tells her to keep coming to my field daily.
Yeah.
So he says, don't go to other fields. Come to my field alone every day. And my workers will be kind to you. And they let her drink from the water supply that had been collected for the workers. So, wow. I mean, that's a lot of privilege.
Yeah.
You know, you come, I'll get my workers to help you. Mm. You can drink freely from the water because it's really hot.
Yeah.
It's hard, dusty work, this gleaning. And Ruth becomes very, very grateful to Boaz for this. And Boaz tells her that God would reward her well for what she had done for Naomi.
Wow.
And we're told that in Ruth 2, 5 to 13. So we've got this situation where Boaz notices Ruth. Mm. He finds out that she's a relative.
Yeah.
And he's grateful for her looking after Naomi, especially in the journey
coming back.
But also that he would now take care of her in his field. Mm. When she came to do the gleaning every day.
Yeah.
So Boaz eats his lunch with her. I thought that was quite nice. Boaz eats his lunch with her and he gave her special treatment and gave her food and drink. And he got his workers to help her. And he actually made it easier for her to glean because it was really, really hard work. So he really showed favour upon her and made it as easy as possible for her.
Yeah.
Because obviously she would take that home, whatever she collected, she would take that home to Naomi and they would be able to cook food and make bread or whatever from that. So in helping Ruth and giving Ruth favour, he was also taking care of Naomi as well. We are told in Ruth 2, 14, verse 23, that Boaz makes Ruth safe.
Mm,
and he makes her safe by keeping her out of danger from being raped in some stranger's field.
Wow.
So he says, don't go to other fields. Be safe. Come to my field. I'll look after you. And she stayed gleaning for the rest of the harvest season.
Wow.
So this was obviously quite a common issue in the gleaning process. It was at night.
Yeah.
It was at the end of the day when the workers had gone home.
Mm.
The women did this,
not
men. Mm. Women came to do the gleaning and it made them vulnerable.
Yeah.
So for anybody who was unscrupulous or had tendencies to hurt or harm, they had a very ripe picking in the fields of vulnerable women to attack.
Wow.
And so Boaz protected her from that. And he said, just come to me and I will keep you safe. Mm. And if you notice, she did it all day. So she didn't go there at night.
Yeah.
So she really did have a privileged, protected life.
Yeah.
Because Boaz enabled that in his field. Mm. The word tells us that Naomi was really pleased with Boaz. Mm. And that she was ultimately happy because he was keeping Ruth safe.
Mm.
Remember, she was a Moabite, so therefore she was an enemy of Israel. So without a husband or a father, she was really vulnerable in those fields.
Yeah.
So the fact that nobody seems to be mentioned that or it's an issue that she's a Moabite, all that matters is that she is a relative of Naomi and that this relative of Naomi's dead husband is now taking care of her.
Yeah.
Now, this is the bit that made me laugh because we hit Ruth 3, verse 1 to 4, and we kind of see Naomi come alive a bit. So up to now, she's been a bit moody and a bit miserable and a bit broken and a bit bitter. But now she's coming alive. She's been taken care of by Boaz via Ruth.
Yeah.
And Ruth comes home from a hard day gleaning, and Naomi tells Ruth that she thinks it's time she found a new husband and got a new life.
Yeah.
And she says, now that Boaz is a good catch, Ruth. And I've got a plan. Oh, don't worry. She's right, old matchmaker. And she said, I've got a plan and we're going to do it tonight.
Oh, wow. That's
quick. I know. It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
And she says, look, we're going to do it tonight because Boaz is going to be winnowing barley on the threshing floor tonight. Mm. And it's going to be a perfect time for you to go and make yourself available to be mm. his wife. So Naomi tells Ruth, go get a bath, put on some perfume, get dressed up and go to the threshing floor.
Yeah.
And what you do is that when you get to that threshing floor, wait until Boaz has eaten and drinking enough, drunk enough. And then I want you to lie at his feet to let him know that you are available for marriage. And wait and see what he says.
Wow.
That's a plan.
That's
scary. I mean, Naomi's been thinking about this for a while, yeah. hasn't she?
Well, she's got all day, hasn't she?
She's gone all day. Yeah. She's gone all day waiting for Ruth to come back with the goodies every day. She's got a plan.
Wow.
And so I think what we need to do at this point is we need to explain some of the customs yeah. because that makes more sense then in the story.
Yeah.
The threshing floor was the last act of harvest. Which usually finished with this massive celebration meal to thank God for blessing the harvest. Mm. And it was, so what they had was a field that was full of barley.
Yeah.
And at the end of the harvest, they would flatten a massive circle in that field. Mm. Similar to what we would see in the UK with the crop circles,
yeah.
where they would just literally flatten a massive circle.
Yeah.
And, it was upon this circle then that the chaff would be finally separated mm. from the grain. And the way they would do that is they would stand in the circle. All the sort of kernels would be on the floor.
Yeah.
They would scoop it up in wide baskets and they would throw it up in the air. And what would happen was then that the wind would come and it would separate the chaff because it was light yeah. and it would be taken away by the wind. But the heavier grain would then fall to the threshing floor
oh, wow.
and it would remain there.
Yeah.
So we've seen that, haven't we, yeah. in movies or pictures where they would just throw the grain up in yeah. the air and then it would kind of separate yeah. the wheat and the chaff. But then what they would do after they had done that process is that they would then stamp upon the grain that had fallen on the threshing mm. floor. And it was stamped upon to loosen the edible part of the grain from the straw yeah. that it was bound to.
Yeah.
So it kind of made it slip out of the little pocket that yeah. it was in. Okay. And so what would happen then was that you'd be left on the threshing floor with just the edible grain that was good.
Wow.
Okay. And that would be the very end of the harvest. Yeah. They would do that. And in biblical times in Israel, threshing floors are really important.
Yeah.
They're big news. Okay. They were places where deals were done.
Mm.
They were places where rites were carried out.
Yeah.
Marriages, divorces, you know, crime and punishment. Yeah. It would all be done upon the threshing mm. floor. Sacrifices were made
wow.
on the threshing floor. And it's also on the threshing floor where kings consulted prophets.
Oh.
And it's also so important that Solomon's temple was even built upon one.
Oh, wow.
So the threshing floors were not just, you know, a run-of-the-mill yeah. sort of part of this process. Mm. They were a very important end mm. of the harvest.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's what the story tells us, that it was obviously the end of the harvest and that Boaz would be doing this work on the mm. threshing floor that night.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, they would have a big feast, a big meal, and he would sleep on the threshing floor that night. That's yeah. what they would have done. So Ruth thinks this is a fab idea. She likes
She's
it.
In.
She's in. And Ruth obeys Naomi. Mm. And so she goes to the threshing floor. And when Boaz fell asleep, he woke up in the middle of the night and he saw Ruth fast asleep on his feet.
Oh, my gosh.
So maybe the story didn't go quite to plan
yeah.
because, you know, she fell asleep.
Yeah.
But they wake up in the middle of the night and she wakes up and she tells him, it's me, Ruth. Yes, you're maiden and you have the right to marry me. Okay.
Wow.
Boaz was really happy. He's happy.
Yeah.
And so we get this flavour from the story up to this,
mm.
that Boaz and Ruth do have a liking for each yeah. other. It's a romantic thing mm. as well as an obligation, which we'll get to in a minute. So there, we have a sense of feeling in this story.
Yeah.
So he's really happy. And then he says, go back to sleep and I'll take care of everything in the morning.
Mm.
Okay. So they both awake in the morning, early in the morning, and Boaz sends Ruth back to Naomi.
Yeah.
But he doesn't send her home sort of empty handed.
Yeah.
He sends her back. This is really romantic. With 6 quarts of barley to bless wow. Naomi. Now, a quart of barley is a lot. Yeah. So I wonder how she got it home.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh.
I don't know. But it was a lot. It was and note, it wasn't the sort of gleaning leftovers.
Yeah.
It was the good barley that had just been harvested. So it was a sign of real commitment. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So he sent it home to bless Naomi and also to tell and show Naomi that he would take Ruth as his wife.
Wow.
I mean, I'd rather an engagement ring myself.
Yeah, me too. Or at least like bread or something.
A diamond. rather than a bag of barley. But, you know, that was the sign of the times.
Yeah.
And so he took care of that and he sent her away. Mm. And so she's happy.
Yeah.
It's all on. Yeah. Fabulous. So this is when now the story comes into a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is where we come into the fullness of the law of the first redeemer rights.
Mm.
And this is a key issue in the story. And it's going to really help us if we understand that the law of the first redeemer rights,
mm.
because it will explain to us really what we can glean from this story and also how we can relate that to our life in Christ. So he sent Ruth away.
Yeah.
Okay. She's happy. She's got her barley. So what he does is he gets up early and he goes to the public square in Bethlehem, and he calls a meeting with the town officials, all right, very early. And he tells them, look, Elimelech's land has to be sold now by the widow Naomi.
Yeah.
And I'm inquiring here if anybody would like to purchase it.
Mm.
And that's from Ruth 4, verse 1 to 8. So that would have been part of the right.
Yeah.
So obviously, Naomi had been left land.
Yeah.
That was her husband's land that they had left to escape the famine.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some type of property or land that was belonged to Elimelech.
Yeah.
But under Jewish law, that did not belong to the wife.
Mm.
It had to belong to a man.
Oh.
So she came back. We don't know when she came back to Bethlehem, where she stayed. I assume with relatives.
Yeah.
Or in a humble home.
Mm.
But she wasn't able to sell or do anything with this land because there was no man involved.
Yeah.
So now that Boaz is involved and said, yes, I'm going to marry Ruth.
Yeah.
Da-da! A male relative is on the scene.
Yeah.
And now the land can be sold.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we're going to get into the law, but it's important that we understand it.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's no biblical reference to Naomi going, can you sell my land for me?
Yeah.
He just took it upon himself. Now it's time to get this sorted.
Yeah.
And then Naomi can be secure.
Yeah.
Okay, so the law stipulated at the time that whoever bought the land would also get Ruth.
Oh.
She was part of the bargain.
Oh, wow.
As part of the first redeemer rights.
Okay.
Because it was the buyer's responsibility to carry on the lineage of the land and secure the inheritance by producing the children within the bloodline.
Yeah.
So remember that we've seen this, haven't we, in past past studies, that in the Old Testament, land was sacred.
Yeah.
Land was a big deal.
Yeah.
Land was not just linked to ownership and sort of position.
Yeah.
It was linked to the promises of God.
Mm.
And so you weren't free to sell land. You weren't free to do things on the land that was not, you know, in the family.
Yeah.
And there is a big link to land being handed down to generations because it's fulfillment of prophecy for Israel.
Yeah.
So you can't sell it. But here we have Boaz selling it.
Mm.
But what we assume because of that is that the people he called together were also relatives of some sort.
Oh, okay.
Because you could only sell it, it had to stay within the family.
Yeah.
Okay. So these people weren't strangers.
Yeah.
they weren't sort of people that have moved into town. They would have had to be some sort of relative, close or distant. As Boaz was. And they were deciding who was going to inherit and buy the land and then carry on the lineage of the family. But part of that was that they would get Ruth too to produce the children to inherit it. Okay. So what happens was a man, we're told this in the Word of God in the Book of Ruth, that a man speaks up and he says, oh, I want the land. But I can't marry Ruth. I can't have the woman because that would interfere with his own inheritance issues. Okay? Because what he would have had to do is split the inheritance if he'd married Ruth between two families. So it interfered with his own inheritance lineage. So he turns to Boaz. He takes off his shoe and he gives it to Boaz. And he says, you will buy the land. Yes, and you will marry Ruth. Yes, and you will become the king's man redeemer. And Boaz was happy with that. Yeah. I think that's what he was secretly desiring. He was offering it to the others because that was the law, that was the custom. But secretly, he wanted the land, but he wanted Ruth. Yes. So he was given the command, you will be the one to do this. And it was his actual desire to carry on the lineage and marry Ruth. So he was really happy. And in Bible times, official business regarding property and sort of inheritance was really, really important. And what would happen is a man would take off his shoe and give it to another person. And that was never refused. It was seen as, I suppose, a modern day signature on a document. It was binding. Okay, we're told that in Ruth 4, verse 7 to 8. So, you know, he had to go take care of business. I mean, there was none of this eloping and spur of the moment romance. You had to get the house in order and the land secured. And that's what Boaz did. So here we are. It's all sorted. He's sealing the inheritance and the land. He's doing all that's right. And, you know, he's taking care of it. Now, a question might arise here, which is why Ruth? Why not Naomi? Because Naomi is the widow. But we'll get to that. Okay. She's part of the deal. But, you know, it is ultimately about securing Naomi because she is the primary widow of the man who owned the land. But maybe because she was elderly, not able to produce any more children, that then would carry on to Ruth, because Ruth was also a widow. But she was a widow of the same clan. Okay. Are you following me?
I think so.
Well, do you know what? I think this would be a really good opportunity to sort of look at the law of the first redeemer rights. Because to me, this is what this whole story is about. And this is where we can really go beyond a story and really see how this law is a type and symbol for us and our relationship with God. So the law of the first redeemer rights was a Jewish custom that became law under the Mosaic law. And it's still practiced in Orthodox Judaism and other Orthodox faiths today. So even today, you will find this law at work amongst Orthodox Jews. And it sometimes clashes with sovereign law, with legal law. But it's still practiced very much so in Orthodox Judaism. So the law of the first redeemer rights has several other little laws attached to it. And they are all basically a variation on the law for different circumstances. So you would hear terminology of this law, for example, the law of the first redeemer rights, the kinsman redeemer law, the covenant redeemers, the guardian redeemers. So they're all the same law, but the circumstances are different and they're given slightly different names under this law. But basically, it's a variation on a theme. They're all, it's the same law. And what this does is that the law requires levirate marriage, which is basically where a brother of a deceased man is obligated to marry his brother's widow in order to keep clan structure.
Yeah.
And what the purpose of that is that it prevents then marriage outside of your type or clan,
mm-hmm.
Which was actually forbidden in Jewish culture.
Wow.
You just didn't do it. Yeah. And so if you go back in the Old Testament and you find that people did marry foreigners, if you look at the wider times that they were living in or the hearts of the people, you could see that that was really, you know, it was forbidden. Mm, they weren't allowed to do it. And we've also said at the beginning of the study that that might have been one of the reasons why the two sons died.
Yeah.
Was because they had done that.
Mm.
They married outside of the Jewish custom and the Jewish law, and married outside of their clan.
Yeah.
So basically this law, the First Redeemer Rights Law, was designed to protect the patriarchal system.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And it was also set in place to protect widows and children, their land,
mm-hmm.
their possessions, and to secure the inheritance.
Yeah.
Because we've already said that that really is very important in Old Testament Judaism, because it was linked to the prophecy and the blessings of God and being parts of God's people.
Yeah.
It was very much about land,
mm-hmm.
okay, inheritance. Women, actually, in Old Testament life had no means, I mean zero, zilch means of survival outside of men in these times. They just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to own things in their own rights, and they had to be totally provided for.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they couldn't inherit land, houses, belongings, donkeys. You know, they couldn't inherit livestock. Mm. They couldn't inherit anything. It all had to be owned by a man, and they would then have to be provided for.
Yeah.
Now, by the time the New Testament kicks in, this is definitely a weakened system.
Yeah.
Definitely. But can we see now why there is such specific sort of instruction for in the New Testament about welfare of widows?
Yeah.
And it was expected that the welfare of widows was a communal act, a communal responsibility. And we certainly find that in the early church.
Mm.
And a lot of that is written about in 1 Timothy 5, about the taking care of widows. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because they weren't allowed to own anything themselves. Mm. They were literally at the mercy of others if their husband died. So this law, this sort of First Redeemer Rights Law, the whole idea of, you know, a man having to, a brother having to marry his dead brother's woman in order to secure the lineage and the inheritance and take care of her was great if you had a brother.
Yeah, that's true.
I did talk about this with Craig, and I said, do you want to go and tell your brother about this law? And he said, I don't think he'd be happy. And I said, no, I don't think he would either. So I'm glad we don't operate in that. But basically, if a brother was not in place, then the nearest male relative had to restore the rights of others.
Okay.
They had to avenge any wrongs. They had to step up.
Yeah.
Again, this maybe would be okay if you didn't have a wife and your own children.
Yeah.
But even if you had a wife and children, you would have still been obligated under the, under the law to either leave your wife and children, but still provide for them and go and marry the widow, yes, or to take her as a second wife.
Wow.
And so, I mean, that's a lot of pressure, isn't it? And
it
also a lot of financial pressure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what these people were able to do, these men were able to do under the First Redeemer Rights, is that they basically had power.
Mm.
They had the power that the dead husband had.
Yeah.
So they could buy back relatives who had been sold into slavery. They could redeem land.
Yeah.
They could act on behalf of the relative in trouble, in who, or if they were in danger or need, he could totally come in and take care of that. And there was a whole ritual to the choosing of that kinsman, as we saw Ruth carry out on lying at Boaz's feet.
Yeah.
And it's funny, isn't it? In such a patriarchal society where women weren't allowed anything, it was actually up to the women to lie at the feet of the relative that she desired.
Oh, wow.
it didn't always work that way.
Yeah.
Because it didn't. Mm. If there was a brother, it had to be a brother.
Yeah.
But this is why Ruth lay at the feet of Boaz. Mm. And it was just another little sign that there were feelings there as well. Okay. So this law is complex.
Yeah.
This law, I mean, it seems so archaic to us today. Mm. But at the time, it was a way of securing prophecy and also taking care of the clan. And to also keep the purity of the clan. Mm. Because then it meant that people didn't have to marry outside, which was forbidden anyway. It was complex. It would have cost you something.
Yeah.
But remember, it meant that you didn't marry necessarily for love. Mm. You married to secure the clan.
Yeah.
So we see that in a lot of old movies, don't we, and stuff, and, you know, where people are put together and it's arranged like an arranged marriage, and there's no consideration about feelings and love and desire and purpose even. Mm. It's just about bringing together to secure the inheritance.
Yeah.
And so you would have had many marriages that were unhappy, many marriages that were complex because maybe there were other wives and children. Mm. It would have been complex because maybe you might have had a much younger new husband, because you would assume that the widows would be the older brother's wives.
Yeah.
So you might have an old woman married to a young man, or it might be the other way around.
Yeah.
And so there were complexities there. But we know that Ruth became, Boaz became Ruth's kinsman's redeemer, and he married her and he secured the land for inheritance. But also remember that the man gets something out of it too, because he gets the land, he gets the inheritance, he gets whatever the dead brother had. So, you know, the wife gets security, she gets children, she gets to be looked after for the rest of her life, and the man gets the land. And so, you know, it's very cold, isn't it?
It feels
very, very cold. But yet in the story of Boaz and Ruth, we get a sense of feelings.
Yeah.
We get a sense of the love of God. Mm. We get the sense of real protection and romance and emotion. Mm. And they did get married, we're told that, in Ruth 4. And he married her and he secured the land and they had a son, one son, and his name was Obed. And what's really wonderful about this is that Obed became the father of Jesse and Jesse became the father of David.
Yeah.
So that included Ruth in the direct lineage of Jesus.
Wow.
And there are only five women mentioned in the direct lineage of Jesus in Matthew 1. So here she comes, this little old girl from Moab, you know, the arch enemy of all Israelites, the arch enemy of God, apparently. And she then really becomes in the direct lineage of Jesus.
Wow.
And but have you noticed we never get told biblically of any problems in Bethlehem because she is a Moab.
No.
A Moabite. Yeah. We don't get told that.
Yeah.
So we really start to see this now. We really start to see the story and the purposes of God unfold.
Yeah.
We know that Boaz was kind. Mm. The word tells us that. He was faithful. He was generous. And he really provided the grace of God to Ruth and Naomi in a really unsafe system of widowhood.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think in those days you would dread two things. One, not marrying after a certain age, because you had to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And if your parents were elderly and they died, you would be alone. Mm. You wouldn't inherit what they had. Maybe that's why when we looked at some of the 70 that were sent out by Jesus, a lot of those were single women.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Because they had not married or they weren't able to inherit. So it was really a very unsafe system, widowhood. You would live in dread.
Yeah.
You really would, because a lot was hanging on it, especially if your husband didn't have brothers.
Mm.
So Boaz really was a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He responded to the faithfulness and kindness of Ruth to Naomi, because remember we heard that.
Yeah.
He thanked her right back at the beginning in the field. Mm. He thanked her for being so kind to Naomi. And this is really, really significant because the Moabites were really known for their ruthlessness. They were unkind.
Yeah.
They were cruel. And if you read some of the ancient writings and you find what they did and how they tortured people, it really was significant. Wow. They had this streak in them that was very unkind. Mm. But also what's interesting is that Elimelech literally means my God who is kind.
Wow.
And so that lineage was carried on beyond his line.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was just really interesting. Mm. That Boaz responds to Ruth's kindness to Naomi.
Yeah.
And he responds to that by being kind to them. Yes.
Yeah.
And allowing them to access the kindness of God.
Yeah.
Because that had been missing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. And what we can learn from this is that Boaz for us is a type of Jesus.
Yeah.
And what I also love is that Boaz really was a key character in helping to restore Naomi's faith in God.
Yeah.
Remember, she rocked up in Bethlehem, totally distraught,
yeah,
bitter, was wondering why God had done this to her. And but what we've seen is that she's come round.
Yeah.
She started to see the goodness of God again. She started to soften.
Yeah.
Yes. And Boaz was the reason why. Mm. So Boaz was just not kind to her. He'd also, his kindness opened a door for Naomi's restoration with her with her relationship to God. And there's a lesson there, isn't there?
Definitely
a lesson there. That as we are kind and as we treat people properly, that that can open up doors to God.
Yeah.
And it really can. What I think is interesting about Boaz is that he definitely met the requirement of the law. He did what he was supposed to do, but he also embraced the spirit behind it.
Mm.
It wasn't just a ritual for him. It was a beautiful thing. It created and birthed happiness. And I think we can learn from Ruth lots of things. And I think one of the things is that we can learn is that God provides and takes care of his people.
Yeah.
As we remain faithful to him in the difficulty.
Yes.
And so, you know, Ruth rocked up on the first day in that field, and I'm sure she didn't actually have to go and glean.
Yeah.
I'm sure actually Boaz would have given her, you know,
some
barley every day to go home. But she didn't assume that. She carried on working.
Yeah.
As God was being faithful to her, she carried on threshing. She carried on working.
Yeah.
She carried on turning up.
Yeah.
And I think we can learn from that. We can learn from that. That when God blesses us, that we keep giving back. We keep doing what we're supposed to.
Yeah.
And we do it with the right heart. I think the other thing that we've got to learn from this story is basically Romans 3 verse 10, which is we all need redemption.
Yeah.
We all actually need a kinsman redeemer.
Yeah.
We need him to come and take care of us, to purchase us out of our slavery and to really look after us.
Yeah.
And that is what he longs to do. And so he is our kinsman redeemer.
Yeah.
Yes. Just as Boaz was Ruth's kinsman's redeemer, God is ours.
Yeah.
And I love that so much that he would come and fulfill the law by taking care of us, but also love to do that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just really, I love that.
Yeah.
I think we can also learn yet again, that when we see God at work in the life of an ordinary woman, he does really huge things.
Yeah.
And she was this ordinary woman with almost a very insignificant story in a lot of ways. But she was in this horrifically difficult life system.
Yeah.
And yet again, God comes and meets her in that place. And he helps her and he shows that she's worth something. And he shows her that she's loved.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a running theme, doesn't it? In all our stories that we've looked at.
Yeah.
That God just does not overlook anyone.
Yeah.
He doesn't overlook anybody. Mm. Everybody is important.
Yeah.
And what I love about the life of Ruth is that I feel such hope from it.
Yeah.
Just that God really will totally provide for us in the most desperate times. But we've got to remain humble.
Yeah.
And we've got to keep working as God blesses us and shows us favour.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing in this story. We see such huge favour. And that's what God does to us.
Yeah.
But it's the quality of the heart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the kindness. Mm. It's the humility. It's the looking after people.
Yeah.
It's letting God do his work. Mm. It's letting God take care of us.
Yeah.
And be our Kingsman's Redeemer.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What speaks to you?
I think, like, just going back to, like, right at the beginning of the story, Ruth had every opportunity to go back home.
Yeah.
And to, you know, go back to her family, because she must have had family.
Yes.
So she, that would have been way easier for her.
Yeah.
To go back and live with them and, you know, with people that she knew.
Yeah.
And yet she chose to be loyal to Naomi.
She loved her.
And to go with her.
Yeah.
Because she knew that if she left her, that left Naomi on her own.
Made her vulnerable.
Yeah. Mm. So even back then, I mean, that seems so opposite to what a Moabite would have done.
Yeah.
Because she's choosing someone else over herself.
Correct, yes.
And yet by doing that, I mean, she doesn't know what's going to happen when she turns up in Bethlehem. No. She might be, you know, ridiculed and turned out.
Well, that might have been a really awful life for her, mightn't it? Yeah. It might have been great for Naomi because she's home.
Yeah.
But it could have been a really awful life for her. But she just wanted to take care of Naomi.
And yet, like you said, in that, God took care of her. Mm. But yet she chose first to take care of someone else other than herself. So I just love that when we put others first, God then kind of meets us
in that place. He takes care of us.
Yeah, and I just love that.
Oh, I love that too so much, because it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we must never just take care of ourselves. Yeah. That's not what we're designed to do.
No.
I really love the whole fact that kindness is such an important thing. I think sometimes kindness can be watered down in the understanding, can't it? It's this sort of wishy-washy, sort of silly thing, and it's not. No. It's so powerful, and it's such a backbone of our of our faith.
Yeah,
is kindness.
Yeah,
is to extend the hand.
Yeah,
is to do what is right. Mm. To treat people properly.
Yeah,
and I love the fact that that's so significant in this story.
Yeah,
and definitely.
I mean, I still have like a lot of questions for Boaz and Naomi and Ruth. I want to know, like, were they ever kind of? Was it ever an issue that she was a Moabite?
Yeah,
I mean. Because Boaz basically signed up to marry her.
Yeah.
So was he ever kind of...
Yeah. I mean, we know he was prominent in Bethlehem. Would that have affected him if he had married, you know, married her?
Or was that kind of not considered because of the Kingsman Redeemer law? Yeah. Was that... Did that overrule? Mm. I still have questions.
I know. I have lots of questions on this one. Get in line.
Yeah.
Get in the line.
We'll do a little conference when we get
Okay, well, tradition says that Ruth is buried in a tomb in Hebron with Jesse, her grandson. Oh. That's not biblical, obviously, but that's what history tells us and tradition tells us. And we know that she is actually a huge figure and remembered specifically in the Jewish feast of Shavuot, which is the Feast of Weeks. Mm. And that's usually 50 days after Passover. And what happens during that is that the Book of Ruth is read aloud throughout the night.
Wow.
As the feast marks the wheat harvest as blessed. Mm. So it's still, that's maybe one of the reasons why the book was separated from Judges, because it becomes part of the Jewish festival of weeks. So yeah, that's still celebrated today and kept today. What I find really interesting to end this story is that you think then we've got this story sussed.
Mm.
Here we have Boaz and Ruth. They are now married. Yeah. The inheritance is secured. Naomi is going to be looked after for the rest of her life. They're in the safety of the Israel in Bethlehem. All is good. Nobody seems to have a problem with the fact of who she was.
Yeah.
But now she is seen as Boaz's wife.
Yeah.
And that's her new identity. So all good, 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 good. Okay. And we're told in Ruth 4 that Naomi helps raise Obed.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And Boaz then took care of Naomi and he acted as her Kingsman Redeemer too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just he took care of Ruth.
Yeah.
He took care of Naomi for the rest of her life too. We know that Naomi was an older widow.
Yeah.
And she would have been one of Ruth's dependents. Mm. So Boaz would have taken care of both of them as an act of compassion, as their Kingsman Redeemer.
Yeah.
But obviously he had the added bonus of a happy marriage with Ruth.
Yeah.
So Naomi would have been part of that parcel.
Yeah.
She would have been part of the deal.
Yeah.
Which was great. And she helped raise the baby Obed.
Yeah.
And this is what I find really interesting. And it's such a random way almost to end the story. It's it creates so many more questions and then the story's over. And, you know, because although Ruth and Boaz had Obed and that was their child, the joy and the accolade of this child goes to Naomi from the people and from the community, and they keep telling her, oh, you're so blessed that God has not forgotten you. Look at you. God has looked upon you and given you great favor now that you have a family. And the baby Obed was even sort of referred to as Naomi's baby, Obed. Obed, well, who's that? Oh, that's Naomi's son, Obed.
Oh, wow.
And it's really odd because we know that it's Ruth and Boaz's child. There's no biblical account of unfairness or complaint from Ruth over this, which I find really interesting. She was so happy, I think, to see Naomi's happy life after she lost her own sons, after she lost her husband, but also after she lost her trust in God. And all of this has been restored through Boaz, opening up this through the Kinsman Redeemer's law. And what has happened is that nobody's really bothered about whether, you know, Naomi gets the praise and the accolade for whose child this is. It's all in the clan. It's all good. He's a grandmama's baby boy. And, you know, we don't care about being precious about things like that. What we're happy about is that Naomi is restored. Okay. She's happy. And also that God had given them all messianic hope in Obed, because he went on to be within the lineage as they did of Jesus himself. So it all worked together for good. And that's in Ruth 4, verse 13 to 16. So I love that, you know, that there really is a good ending to the story. And Ruth is not mentioned again in the Bible after this. She's only mentioned briefly in the lineage of Jesus and the Gospel of Matthew. That's all. And I just think that that's really interesting. So, yes, that's Ruth. And I think that you can see how what I love, too, is that sometimes laws open doors to life if you are able to be led through them. We don't live by the law, under the law today. We live under the freedom. But we live under what's right by God. And it's still the same principle. So I really do love that, that Ruth was kind. She was loyal. She risked her life going back to Bethlehem and leaving Moab. But God restored that and blessed her for that. In through this guy called Boaz, who owned a couple of fields.
That's not bad.
I know. But as we understand the law, it kind of opens up our understanding a bit more, doesn't it? And that's what I really have been enjoying about these studies, is as we look into the nitty-gritty and to the things that maybe sometimes we would just gloss over, we get fuller understanding about what that means for us today. And I love that. Very much, very much so. So beautiful story.
That's a good one.
Really, really good. And I just think that I love the fact that he's our Kinsman Redeemer. That he's the one that comes and takes care of us, buys us back out of slavery, protects us, lifts us out, takes the role, steps up. And that then we have new identity. Whatever we were dies. Whatever we are now in him is what is true. And that makes me really happy. I love it. The blood connection. The tribe.
Yes, the clan.
Well, I hope you found that interesting today. I do love Ruth. Have I mentioned it for a while? I think this one's my favourite. I say that about everyone. Okay, so next week we're going back to the New Testament because we haven't been there for a while. We're going to jump on and we're going to look at Luke. Luke's a good one. I think it might be my favourite. some good stuff coming there. Okay, so hope you've enjoyed that. And don't forget, let him be your Kinsman Redeemer today, because that is what he desires, to come, to save us, to take care, buy us out of slavery, and to give us new identity as his forever. Till next time. Bye.
Bye.